Welcome to Inner Healers, a radio show dedicated to bridging science and spirituality by sharing the latest news on integrative health and overall well-being from a spiritual standpoint. Producer Luciana Stiglich, BASM, is a medicine woman and will be your host in this adventure. Join her every Wednesday to remember you can heal from within. You are an inner healer. Are you ready? This journey starts right here, right now.
Topic has to do with how can we deal from our mental state with this pandemic. So our topic for today is how do we go from anxiety to a skillful action during this pandemic. And our special guest this morning is Jack Elias. So Jack is a specialist in transpersonal hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming. He's the founder and director of the Institute for Therapeutic Learning in Seattle, USA. Hello, thanks for being with us today, Jack. Good morning.
My pleasure, Luciana. Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about your background. You've been working for many years already with people that have experiencing difficulties, right?
Yes. I started practicing Buddhist meditation and studying Buddhist psychology at the age of 20. And so I'm 73 now. So I've been doing that for a long time. And I encountered hypnosis and NLP after I'd been doing my Buddhist studies intensively for about 15 years. And what I found was that the wisdom that was being presented in the hypnosis trainings and the NLP trainings was like little bits and pieces of what I had learned in a much more comprehensive way in my Buddhist studies. So that was, you know, that was a very wonderful confirmation that I had made the right choice in my studies. And it also showed me that there was a way I could present this Eastern wisdom to Westerners. It's like the hypnosis and the NLP would become like a front through which I could help people understand in a much more comprehensive way. So I started my therapy practice and my teaching practice about 32 years ago. So I've been training people to be certified hypnotherapists, been training them to practice NLP, and I have been my private practice. So I've had I have an international clientele. I've been working for about 25 years over phone, Skype, Zoom, WhatsApp, FaceTime.
Yes,
take your pick.
Yes. I had almost forgotten about the session. Right now, Zoom is everywhere. So let's see, for people who might not be aware or might not know much about what neurolinguistic programming is, and also what hypnosis is, you know, because many people have this idea that hypnosis has to do with a magic trade, you know, that you can actually make people behave like a dog or behave in a way that their consciousness is taken away from them. You can like control them through hypnosis.
Yes.
Whereas when you work with neurolinguistic programming, you're more into Ericksonian kind of hypnotherapy. Can you please explain this to our listeners?
Yes. Lots of people have lots of opinions about what hypnosis and NLP are, including hypnotists and NLP practitioners. And a lot of times they will argue with each other about hypnosis versus hypnotherapy. I would tell you that anytime you have people doing that, understand that they don't have a very deep understanding, because there's nothing to argue about. Both of these Western disciplines are just ways of presenting inherent human wisdom. So there's insights and practices And because we're human beings, as with any other kind of knowledge, it can be perverted with bad motivation. So a lot of people kind of, as you said, they have a kind of, they make it kind of magical and mystical. Oh, hypnosis can control you, but people are controlling us all over the place. You know, it's, so don't be naive and make it like there's this little special case, because from my Eastern studies, what I learned was, when I encountered hypnosis and NLP, is that Westerners think that they're in this real self and that these things are outside of that. But what I, the way I have presented my perspective on hypnosis is that the mind, thinking mind, is inherently hypnotic. We are in hypnosis all the time. Every time you follow some thought from your subconscious mind, your self-talk, that's one suggestion after another. You know, feel bad, think you're a bad person, get really scared. You know, that's all just hypnotic suggestion. It's hypnotic suggestion all the time. And so you can get, throw away the word hypnosis. It's just suggestion. It's responding to a thought. All thoughts are just opinions. None of them are true. What happens, though, is because we're susceptible to suggestion. And if they happen often enough and vividly enough, we become habituated to them. And when we're habituated to a belief, because a suggestion is just a belief, it's a proposal. But when we become habituated to a proposal, a belief, we forget it's a belief, we think it's the truth. And so we become, that's a very powerful, limited hypnotic state. Only what I believe is the truth. And the most horrific thing that it does is it cuts us off from our human heart, because we're going around like this, and if somebody else is looking at a different belief, we could even become enemies and kill each other. It's very tragic. It's needless. All of this needless suffering of human conflict is needless. It's all unnecessary submission to negative suggestions, and they're not coming from hypnotists. Most of them are coming, unfortunately, generationally through our parents. People pass on all the defective, deluded learnings they get, and if you don't do personal work to get free of them, then you just pass them on too.
So becoming attached to a thought would be the cause for suffering.
Yes. Yes, because you lose the awareness that it's just a proposal. You can test it out, but, and then if you don't get the results, test something else out. See, one aspect of being entranced by suggestions is that we live in a moralistic world. And what I mean, the problem with the moral, like people might say, well, what's the problem with morality? You have good, you have bad, it's important to have morality. But what they don't understand is those opinions about what's good and bad are relative. Something in one society is good and another society is bad. So it's still opinion. But when you think of it as my morality, again, you say it's the truth. And that causes, raises the potential for conflict inwardly, beating yourself up, I'm not a good enough person, or outwardly with someone else, you're a bad person. But the real essential thing to understand is that moralistic thinking is based on false notions of the law of cause and effect. That's why it's damaging. It's based on fictional laws of cause and effect, as opposed to the real law of cause and effect. Like in our topic today, we want to go from anxiety to effective action. Effective action, the essence of effective action is staying in accord with the actual laws of cause and effect. It's not based on pumping yourself up with some, you know, self-hypnosis or NLP, I'm a great salesperson, I can accomplish anything. None of that is going to help if you're not acting according to the actual laws of cause and effect. Now, because we get most of our programming in childhood, because before the age of seven, a lot of people don't know this, children are not little adults. We're not fully formed when we're born. In fact, very significantly, we don't have a fully formed brain until around the age of seven. Specifically, we don't have a cognitive discriminating faculty, which means before the age of seven, we're totally suggestible, which is why we can delightfully believe in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny, but we also, with equal conviction, can be taught to believe we're bad and we don't deserve to be happy. It's all suggestion.
So in a way, doing transpersonal work and going through hypnosis therapy and going through neurolinguistic programming can actually help us confront those beliefs that, as you were saying, sometimes we just inherit them from our ancestors, from our parents or whomever we're growing up with, right. Be it parents, be it grandparents, be it teachers at school, be it our uncles. So in a way, we receive all of this information. Yeah. And we
advertising, TV commercials.
Within the family, yes. And so when we become adults and we have developed our cognitive abilities, we can actually use them through inner work to let go of those beliefs that have already fulfilled their mission in our lives, because many of them have to do with allowing us to survive, right, in the world.
Right.
So when we become adults, we can actually let go of all those beliefs that have already completed their mission in our life, and we can, instead of them, we can replace them with healthier beliefs that will allow us to be conscious about what you're saying, this law of cause and effect.
Yes. The thing in childhood, we're naturally immature, and the law of cause and effect we have as a child is basically, if I want something, I should have it. That's not a real law of cause and effect. But it's the thing is, that gets programmed. And if we don't mature, then that essential law of cause and effect completely pervades our morality. It's like our morality is based on, if I want something, I should have it, which leads to tremendous destructive criticism, because you notice you want things, but things aren't working. Why aren't I getting what I want? The universe is against me. People are against me. It's not fair. All kinds of craziness, because we're operating according to the law that if I want something, I should just have it. If I might just take a chance here, our president, who exhibits this kind of immature mentality, what did he say as soon as he got in office? I should get the Nobel Prize. Why? Because I want it. You gave it to him, you should give it to me. I'm not trying to pick on him. He's not the only one. If he were the only one, he couldn't be in power. So we have to look at these things in ourselves and not be distracted by the fact that other people have this problem too. So operating according to the actual laws of cause and effect means you have to pay attention to your experience. Like most people would acknowledge, they have constant internal subconscious gossip going on, self-talk, right? So we're very familiar with thinking. But I ask people, what do thoughts think about? What do thoughts relate to? And they kind of instantly go into a state of, I don't know. And so I keep coaxing them, and they keep guessing. Like someone might say, well, no, that's not true. I think about a pen. But pen is a thought. Thoughts can only refer to other thoughts. When you really get that, and you could really get it right now, because it's not rocket science. It's very simple. Thoughts can only refer to other thoughts, which means it's impossible to think about yourself. You are not a thought. But everybody thinks they're thinking about themselves. in their soap opera of their life, what's going good, what's going bad, what I'm afraid of, what I'm happy. They think they're thinking about themselves. And they suffer a lot because they have a big story based on their past failings about why they're not good enough. They think those are valid because they're valid memories, and they think this is valid that I'm a bad person, say. But you're not thinking about yourself. You're thinking about an idea of self, which means who you think you are is your essential and most profound hypnotic suggestion. It's a bundle of suggestions about who you are. None of them are who you are because they're all just thoughts. Who you really are is not a thought. So it's impossible to think about yourself, which means right now, if you're listening, if you get this, you could feel a tremendous release from the burden of your past and how it proves there's something wrong with you, because all of that is just fluff. It's just hypnotic suggestion.
Right, because you are yourself just by existing. So you are the fact of being here, and that's it. Everything else are just things that you tell yourself constantly, and so your reality is created.
Yes, and you cannot be an object of awareness. So you can never look at yourself. I'm going to look at my real self. It's impossible. You can't be an object in awareness that you can see as an object, because that would mean you're separate from it, which would mean it's not you.
Right.
So you can never perceive yourself. You can only have a felt, intuitive sense of the nature of being, which is our true self is being. And it has no boundary, which is when you have an intuition of being, then you welcome everyone because you recognize we're all the same being. And that's the way to put an end to violence. And it's also with that awareness, you can function and be creative and collaborative, creating wonderful things in the world to the optimal degree.
Beautifully said. So for all our listeners who are today here with us, and those who will be listening to us through the replays, through YouTube, through the radio show, what can we tell them about how does this happen in a pandemic context? Which means, how does our brain work in a pandemic context? Why? Because our freedom is being taken away from us. So our basic right of existing, in a way, is being taken away from us because...
Okay, this is a hypnotic suggestion. This is a hypnotic suggestion.
And that's the thing.
Our basic way of life, our ability to live, is not being taken away. What's being taken away is our habitual patterns of behavior, which are based on hypnosis, and the idea of the person we are who's following that. That person is being limited. But the real you is not limited. You're only limited if you tell yourself you're that. So you're fundamentally free all the time. When people are suffering, they typically think, I've lost my freedom and I have no power. To my mind, it's very important to understand you always have all your power. You always have all your freedom. It's genuine freedom, which means if you choose to use your power to create suffering, you can create horrible suffering and nothing will get in the way because you're genuinely free. But what people do is, like, you know, the essence of suffering is that we squeeze ourselves mentally, emotionally, and physically. So if you decide to do activities to squeeze yourself and create suffering, at a certain point it gets so bad, you misinterpret your experience. You say, oh, I'm lost. I have no freedom. I have no power. No. Your suffering is so intense because you have all your power to make it intense, and you're free to do that. If you have that understanding, instead of buying into the suggestion, I've lost my power and I have no freedom, if you remember, I'm always free and always powerful, when you've been inattentive so long that you create it, the pain eventually is going to wake you up and you can go, wait a minute, why am I doing this with my power? And you can let it go. But if you feel it and think, I've lost all my power, you unwittingly squeeze even harder.
There's a psychiatrist in story called Viktor Frankl.
Yes.
He was a Jew that had to go through concentration camps. And he experienced a lot of loss, and he experienced being in prison, and he experienced fear of death because people were dying through gas chambers. And he came up with this understanding that nobody can actually take freedom away from you, which is what you're basically saying. Because wherever you are, just by the fact of existing, of being here, being present, you can exercise your freedom by choosing how to act in every situation, not disregarding whatever is actually happening outside of you.
Right. Yeah, if you can release fearful identification with the body-mind, fearful identification with your idea of self, you stay in the flow of being. And that being is incredibly resilient and powerful. And in terms of your ability to think and your physical well-being as well. There's a story of another prisoner when they were liberating one of the camps. And there's this one prisoner who could speak some English. So he was helping them sort people out and find out where they were from and stuff. And, you know, everybody was in a horrible state. But this translator guy, he seemed pretty healthy and clear and energized. And so they assumed he'd like only been there a few months. And so when they finally got around to asking him, you know, everyone else is suffering so terribly. You seem pretty good. Were you just a recent arrival? And he says, no, I've been here for 10 years. But not 10 years, 6 years, I guess. And then he shared how he realized very early on that the only way to survive was to care about other people. And that actually kept him healthy and vital.
Yes, definitely.
Because when you don't squeeze, squeezing is how we block the inherent, natural, spontaneous flow of our healthy, renewing energy, which is being itself. When we squeeze, we cut that off. And if we don't understand clearly what we're doing, when we feel the pain of it, again, we make the mistake, oh no, something's wrong, and then we make it worse by squeezing harder because of fear. But when you release the fearful squeezing, everything gets better. Your intelligence gets better, your health gets better, your creative ability gets better. We have a very strong hypnotic suggestion, however, that fear is our friend. People don't want to let go of it. And that's because it's all involved with moralistic, defective cause and effect thinking. If you understand that fear is never your friend, and I'm not talking about fight or flight instinct, that's a totally different thing. I'm talking about psychological fear. Psychological fear, the essence of it, no matter how philosophical you get about it, the essence of fearful thinking and the emotion of fear is that you're squeezing yourself. If you recognize that, it's easy to put energy into releasing fearful thinking and fear and getting over the idea they're your friend, because you can look at this and say, how is this going to help with anything?
Yes, in a way, what you say is that you contract, and yes, life actually exists in movement. So whenever you just don't, it's like you not only move, like physically moving, but you also move by moving your thoughts. So you're constantly moving, even though you feel like you're trapped inside your house, for example, what's happening in this pandemic, right? So can we talk to our listeners a bit about how does the brain work, in the sense that when we feel that something is attacking us, or that something outside of us wants to mess with our ability to live, we have this reaction, which is totally normal, which is what you were talking about, which is the fight or flight response, because if not, you just freeze. And you know, if you were in the middle of the forest and then you see a lion, you either run away or you attack the lion, because if you get frozen, you get eaten by the lion. So maybe many of our listeners right now who are having a difficult deal to deal with isolation and with the fear of dying because of this virus, maybe these people would like to know how to get from a fearful standpoint, which is I fear for my life, I fear for my freedom, I fear for my economy, I feel uncertain about what's going to happen in the future with me and my family, to what we're talking about, which has to do with waking up and developing our awareness, healing our inner self and developing our awareness so that we can actually realize who we are and let go of this fear. But this is a process. So can we talk about, you know, going NLP, going from A to B?
Yeah. So we follow habitually fearful thinking. As children, we learn, like we're spontaneous initially, and maybe for a while, people smile at us no matter what we spontaneously do, but at some point, they start enforcing discipline. So you start getting punished for being spontaneous. So you learn that a wholesome, spontaneous feeling, you learn that that's dangerous, and you learn to hate it. Because every time you have it, you get punished. And because you don't have a cognitive faculty, you can't understand they're wrong for doing that. You just believe them that I'm bad for having this feeling. So you learn to hate in varying degrees your inner life. And the way you do that is when the feeling comes, you block it in part by imposing the message you got from your parents or whoever. So you learn to associate your wholesome feelings with negative hypnotic suggestions. And so when you're having emotional turmoil, it's not the emotion that's the problem. It's the storyline that's the problem. Because it's like taking a stick and constantly stirring a pond, so there's constant waves of turmoil. And again, just like with squeezing, oh no, I don't like squeezing something wrong, so ironically you squeeze harder. Same thing with the stick. My mind is in turmoil. So you start doing the stick harder. I got to get rid of the waves. Thing to do is go the opposite direction and back off. And you have to practice recognizing that you can feel the energy of feelings. You don't need to name it. And you don't need to think the storyline is inherently a part of it. It's extra. It's a habitual extra addition that prevents us from relating in a whole felt sense way with the nature of emotional energy, which is that it's just a temporary vibration. It means nothing. Your emotions don't mean anything about you. They don't mean anything about you. They're not a judgment of you. They don't prove you're good or bad. They're just a temporary fluctuation in your energy system. So when you learn to remember that habitually, then you're very comfortable with emotions, because emotion is not a problem. It's not a problem. Oh my God, I'm feeling this feeling. Suddenly I have a big project. What am I going to do about this feeling? Don't do anything about it. Just relax and it will go away all by itself. Same with thoughts. Your thoughts are not about you. Thoughts are about the idea of you. You can like sit in a theater seat and metaphorically just watch them go on a screen, you know, that they put on foreign films? You can't, what do you call it? It escapes me. When they put the words on a film so you know what the people are saying. Anyway, it's gone out of my head. Anyway, so just watch the thoughts. Practice realizing you're not in them. Even if you see your name there or I, me, my, you, they're just sounds. They're just words. They're not you. The sense of isolation is not because of a true restriction on your aliveness. It's because you've learned to squeeze yourself in relationship to your habitual patterns. If your established habitual patterns, which you consider your real life, if they're not obstructed, you're not squeezing so much. But when they do get obstructed, you unwittingly have a program you're not aware of that if my habitual patterns are being inhibited, my only alternative is to squeeze myself and get upset and afraid. No, you have the alternative, let them go. Appreciate spaciousness, because now you're not in the box of having to follow that habitual pattern. You can appreciate spaciousness, but that doesn't get you far if you think spaciousness is a thing. The transpersonal aspect is really taking to heart that we are a manifestation of pure being. We are not what we think we are. We're a miraculous manifestation of pure being. We're not Freud's idea of the ego. We're not Jung's idea. We're not any of that. We're beyond all of that. All of that is just thinking. But a lot of therapy is about having a better idea of yourself, as if that's the ultimate thing. It's not the ultimate thing. It's just trading one trance for another. So transpersonal work is waking up that you get to use the mind as a tool, but you're not inside the mind. It can't inflict punishment on you. The only way you feel punishment is if you have a thought, slap yourself in the face, and you go, okay. And you go, oh, it's making me suffer. No. It's just habituated, negative, hypnotic activity. And it's basically fluff. It's not powerful. Like, ooh, you know, that's another suggestion. Oh, my trances are so powerful. That's just another, you know. They're all fluff. Just practice breathing and smiling. And like Viktor Frankl and this other person, the way to keep your freedom when you're physically in a box is to make some gesture as best you can to help others. Pray for others. If you can do nothing else, realize everyone is so many millions of people are suffering the same thing you are. Pray that everyone finds relief and peace. Put your energy into that. It's
right.
Real simple.
You have written a book which is called Finding True Magic, and you tell people about all of this that we're talking in your book. And when you talk about the way in which we can talk to ourselves, you talk about the function of phrasing a goal rather than the content of the goal itself. So the idea would be, or you actually say, it's generally a good idea to phrase a goal as a currently developing process rather than a finished achievement that might be rejected. So maybe this is a tip that we can give our listeners, and that they can do at home whenever they feel these negative thoughts or these uncontrollable thoughts that belittle them in any way.
Yeah, okay. So the thing is, we don't feel negative thoughts. We accept the negative suggestion, and then we have an emotional response to it. The problem there is it happens so fast because our subconscious mind it doesn't logically analyze reality. Our subconscious mind determines reality according to vividness. So an emotion is a lot more vivid than a thought. But the thought creates the emotion. But because the emotion is so vivid, we immediately focus on the emotion. We have no idea that we're creating it. We think it's coming from outside at us. So one thing a person can do is recapture awareness of their process of creating their emotional state, which is when you have an emotion, first relax with it, practice its opportunity to recognize this doesn't mean anything about me. I can relax and feel this energy. What do I have to think? What do I have to believe to generate this energy? And then inquire into that. Maybe especially in the beginning, best sit down and write it. Write down, what do I have to believe to generate this emotion? And then write the first thing that comes up. Typically, it will be a belief, because that's how, what, but the thing is, beliefs are like layers of an onion. Don't settle for the first belief. Then you go, well, what do I have to believe that belief? And then what do I have to believe that belief? And number one, just in the process of doing this, before you get any like really good answers, just in the process of inquiring, your emotional turmoil will reduce because you're not feeding it with your attention. All activity requires energy and attention. All activity requires energy and attention. Any energy and attention you're putting into one activity is not available for another activity. So again, if you want to create something genuinely beneficial, that would be an activity requiring energy and attention. Any energy and attention you put into worrying about if you're going to be successful, or what are other people going to think of you, any kind of fearful thinking requires energy and attention too. So any energy and attention you're putting into fear and worry and judgment is energy and attention not available to do the thing you want to do. So you're not going to be able to do it as well. Understanding this simple understanding can help you reject fear, because now it's not a moralistic struggle. Like, oh, I have to be, if you recognize it just in terms of systems. if I put 50% of my energy over there, this is going to go a lot slower than if I put 100% of my energy into it. And the thing that you mentioned about a present process as opposed to a fixed goal, when you have a fixed goal, you tend to dump all of your habitual patterns of hope and fear into that and lose the awareness that to accomplish a goal requires following the laws of cause and effect that will actually produce that goal. And following the laws of effect is a moment-by-moment thing. So you want to be engaged in a moment-by-moment process of making an action and noticing the feedback and making adjustments. So that's being very involved in present activity. You have the goal in mind, but you're not fixating on it, which means generating hope and fear. And then when you get some feedback that a proposal you had about, well, I think I should go this way to get there, and then it gets blocked, if that goal is fixed, it's going to tend to make you go into the false cause and effect from childhood, which was, wait a minute, I want that, so I should have it. This is so unfair. I can't do it. What's wrong with me?
Right. So what you're saying is that focusing on our topic for today, whenever we experience anxiety and we believe this anxiety has to do with the result of how we experience the pandemic, we could actually sit, breathe, and think about or realize which are the thoughts that we believe in that are creating this anxiety.
Yes. And so we create anxiety. We create our emotional turmoil because the emotional is the response to what we think, what we believe. Now, not only do you have to think fearful thoughts to create anxiety, even if you think fearful thoughts, you could recognize, even though I'm thinking fearful thoughts, I still don't have to respond to them. So it's a lot easier than people think. People think they have to get rid of the thoughts, they have to get rid of them. No, you just can notice them and not respond, because they're just thoughts about other thoughts. They're not about you. They're just fictional. You have a right to question them. You could be open-minded. You say, maybe you're right, but before I get upset, it's only fair you show me the evidence. If you can show me the evidence, then I'll get upset. There's never any evidence. There's only opinion.
Right. Thank you so much, Jack, for being with us today. Are there any ideas you would like to share with our listeners before we finish the show?
Sure. I work with people internationally via virtual work. If they want to do private work with me, I have trainings. I do seminars. I have a lot of products. I have a lot of free products, like YouTube clips and my articles and my blog at jackelias.com, which is another website where I keep my blog. So jackelias.com, findingtruemagic.com if they want to get in touch with me and see what I have to offer. I'd love to work with everybody. And I will be doing more of these kinds of online classes, my own Zoom online classes, so they could keep an eye out for those.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, dear Inner Healers friends, now you know Jack Elias. This is the first time we have him as a guest on our show. I really hope that you can join us for more conversations like this. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot from you today. You can contact him. His name is Jack Elias. You can search for him on, he has a Facebook page. He's on social media. He also has a web page. And you offer sessions online and classes online, right?
Yes.
Okay. So wherever you are, if you feel like you need some kind of guidance processing what you're going through due to this pandemic, due to this COVID-19 virus, then Jack Elias is your guy. He has written an amazing book as well. It's on sale on Amazon. Thank you, Jack, for being here today with us, and we really hope to have you again soon.
I would love to be
sharing with us. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a nice day. Bye bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Inner Healers, a radio show dedicated to sharing the latest news on integrative health, overall well-being, and spirituality. You can follow Inner Healers on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Join producer, host, and medicine woman Luciana Stiglich, BASM, every Wednesday for mind and heart-opening episodes. For questions and comments, drop her a line at luciana@innerhealers.org and support her work by donating on PayPal. Come back next week for another interesting conversation with one of her guests. To remember you can heal from within, you are an inner healer.